finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
So I'm looking at our Facebook site here, and I'm saying, for the benefit of those without Times subs like Alex Leftuke, in advance of our radio interview this morning, as published in the Times on Tuesday, 8th of April. I'll have you know, William, I actually went out and purchased a copy of the Times, which I passed over to our Deputy Vice-Chancellor, Professor Scott Davidson, at the beginning of this programme today. Did I not, Scott?
You did indeed.
Exactly.
Actually, I'd read the article already on £6 bottles of wine.
Well, there we are, you see. A wonderful guide to all sorts of things. Rachel Warren's... And Rachel, of course, wine, does that... Are you a wine connoisseur?
Not a connoisseur, but I do enjoy wine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of these tips are superb. How to match wines, how to store wine and serving temperatures, what to ask a sommelier and how not to look stupid. Restaurant sommelier is there to enhance your pleasure, not to show off. So use him or her wisely. William, again, I could already see the excitement mounting for Friday the 9th of May with every sense of the word, but we are here to talk about... I mean, Scott, in terms of, let's say, Baroness Hogg this evening, do you think there'll be a wine tasting involved in some way, shape or form?
Well, I think we can expect a lovely glass of the University Plonk afterwards.
Well, there we are.
£6 a bottle would be extravagant.
It is higher education. William, where do you want to take us with this magical scenario? Say a top 10 list of top scenarios. Actually, it's more than 10, 11, including vintage or non-vintage. I'm going to like this. I'm sorry, but, you know, in case you're sort of wondering, what is he talking about? It's a social networking thing. You can like things. We'll be on Twitter next. We are, of course, at SirenFM. William, where do you want to take us with this magical delight?
Well, you actually want me to say something. I was just enjoying you rambling away. amazing, really. What you can achieve at this time of day on a radio station. Yeah. No, actually, the Times asked me if I could write a little bluffer's guide to wine, so I did. I wrote 15 points. They published 10, put 12 online. So I put 12 on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know... People are drinking more wine than ever, and it's a very complicated subject, and I think that the fact that there is so much information, and I mean, I think the greatest tasters are people with an extraordinary mathematical brain. People go to these tastings in Bordeaux over sort of several days, and they'll taste hundreds of wines, and somehow they manage to compartmentalize the different tastes that they've had and the different wines, and somehow sort of remember it, whereas most people... You know, just about tell the difference between red and white. They think they know one thing. So it's a very difficult subject to communicate on, actually. And if you can do it in a slight sort of light-hearted way, so much the better. And people do get very frightened when they're in restaurants and sommeliers, men with little badges displaying bunches of grapes, approach them. And, people get scared, but sommeliers are there to help you. So... I think the more we can learn and more we can experiment, the better. But as this piece, I think there was a story that came out at the beginning of the week in one of the papers which basically said that the British public are not really prepared to spend more than £6 on a bottle, which is actually an extraordinarily low figure, because if you take into consideration the amount of tax you have to pay, unless you pay £5, you know, if you pay £5, you're not actually buying wine. You're buying bottling, taxation, distribution. You know, you're not buying grape juice. So, the thing that is quite hard to understand is actually the more you spend on wine, the more you spend on wine, if you see what I mean. The more you spend on the actual juice, the fermented grape juice, rather than the bottling and the tax and so on.
Scott, from your time in New Zealand and Australia and so on, is there a difference in culture from that perspective?
Yes, yeah. I lived in New Zealand during the 90s when the wine industry really took off in New Zealand. And it was quite interesting. At first they stuck with the Sauvignon Blanc, the standard Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, the sort of cut grass and gooseberry smell that I think everyone's familiar with. But then they started to experiment, and they found that with the different, what the French call terroir, They were getting very different kinds of wines from typical European varietals like Riesling and Viognier. It was fascinating to watch it develop. And one of the things that I really do miss is not being able to pop down to a vineyard and do a lateral tasting.
Do a workplace with William Sitwell. He'll look after that.
The other thing is, if you look at the general shifts in climate change, the south of England is getting the sort of climate that you get in the Champagne region, and you're seeing a lot of investment from big French houses and so on pouring into the UK. And you know, our climate would have severely changed when you were able to go down to Hampshire or Kent and do a vertical tasting. And actually, it's probably not too far away. But you know, you mentioned the concept of terroir. I mean, it is extraordinary. And firstly, I think what's extraordinary is the fact that two different wines can taste so different, despite the fact that they're still coming from a grape. I mean, I think it's one of the great wonders of nature. And the other thing is that single grape can taste so different depending on where it's planted. So if you take a popular grape today like Grüner Veltliner, which is an amazing sort of quite a grassy, beautifully scented grape that's traditionally grown in Austria, the Australians, the Americans are now growing it and producing Grüner Veltliners that taste remarkably different from the ones that come from the mother country. So it just adds complexity. And I think that one of the things I was writing about in the Times is trying to help people to describe wine, giving them words and so on, because it can be quite complicated. I was saying that here are some words you can use, although not necessarily at the same time. Big, buttery, bright, crisp, creamy, dense, oak, soil, chocolatey, grapefruit, silky, structured, toasty, velvety, flamboyant, massive, white, opulent, charcoal, austere, muddy, angular, raspberry, grassy, green, beery, acid, tea. Baked, clean, bitter, cloying, long, piquant, sharp.
It's just as well this is available via podcast, so we can play this back again. I do like the notion of, when you say, this tête de cuvée is so vin gris in colour. Don't say, ooh, what a lovely blush. I like that. Particularly like that. Rachel, wine and such like, what do you prefer? Is it a kind of gender thing? You prefer the men to sort of say, this is what we look for in a sort of sophisticated wine?
I like wine, but I have to say I'm one of the people who don't spend much money on wine. But I'm not saying £5, but like on the cheaper scale of wine, what would you suggest as a good wine if someone didn't want to spend that much money?
You asking me?
I'm asking, yeah.
There are some, you can shop around a lot of supermarkets. I mean, funnily enough, you can get some very cheap wines at Aldi. They've got a very good Muscadet, which is £5.99. In Asda, you can get a very nice Cabernet Sauvignon from Chile, which is about £5. Tesco and Morrison's have it about £5.99. You can get amazing Tesco do a finest Douro Red from Portugal, which is about £6. You can get a lot of good wines in that region in most of the supermarkets, including Waitrose. So, there are a lot of good wines that are under that you can get cheaply. And the other thing is that whilst on the one hand I'm saying that unless you spend a substantial amount of wine, you're not actually spending money on wine, such is the competitiveness amongst supermarkets, they will be selling wines probably cheaper than they're maybe even buying them for in order to get punters in. So you can, because of the buying power that supermarkets have, they can cut pretty amazing deals and offer customers amazing discounts. So, if you're not feeling flush, you can get a good bottle of wine for under £7.
But remember, drink in moderation.
Of course.
Hang on a second. This is a student radio station.
Yeah. The radio station for the community. The community is the radio station, etc., etc. William, again, another absolutely splendid tour de force of wine scenarios. And it's also reminded me that there are two campaigns we've kind of let slide over the last few weeks. One is, of course, the chocolate brownie competition, which we haven't actually provided our midweek drivettes as yet with the recipe for perfect chocolate brownies. And then, obviously, you will judge the best winning for chocolate brownies when you're up in Lincoln as part of the Lincoln Inspired Festival, perhaps, or even we'll come down to London and see you. And just in case people are actually wondering, that grand event is taking place at the Lincoln Inspired Festival location of the superlative room upstairs at the Lincoln Drill Hall, 4,000 years in 2,000 seconds, food. with William Sir. Well, that's the genius. Yes, the mustard. In fact, actually, there's a little yellow light bulb just by that, which sort of indicates that it's a special Lincoln-inspired bright idea. It highlights the events that are the team's top picks for festival fun. So there we are, William. You are a team top pick for festival fun at Lincoln-inspired.
Wow.
Exactly. Always critical. And of course, there is the controversy over round plates or square plates. Scott, which one do you prefer, square or round plates?
Oh, round, of course.
Round. And Rachel?
Sorry?
Square plates or round plates?
Oh, square.
Square?
Yeah,
you
look cool.
Why would you want your food on a square plate?
I don't know, I just think they look nice.
Well, it's better than a slate.
Yeah, I can
I'm
see...
I'm still getting abuse on Twitter for this.
I know. Yeah, well, you know,
listen to this. So people are still watching MasterChef from 2 weeks ago. Mm. Brittany Fisher posts today at William Sitwell, does the food really tatsy, she can't even spell, any different just because it's on a square plate, Jobsworth, she says.
Yeah.
Appalling, isn't it? I think I should report that.
Well, exactly. You know, if you can't use those social networking tweets appropriately, then, you know, just don't. You can tweet us at SirenFM as well. It's all great stuff. Or indeed William directly. William, it's been fabulous as ever. Scott, would you like to ask William those last two questions, please?
Well, not a... Sorry.
No.
I was just going to say, we do have a vineyard in Lincolnshire, outside of Brigg. It's the northernmost vineyard in the UK.
Sorry, I will challenge you on that. The most northerly vineyard in the United Kingdom. It's by Renishaw Hall, up near Chesterfield and Sheffield, and it was planted by my uncle.
Ooh.
And it was the most northerly vineyard in Western Europe until about 10 years ago. Someone then shoved a few vines in about a mile north of that, but I don't think they produce anything. So I'm sorry to slap you down on that one.
Oh, you know. Is Sheffield on a higher latitude than Brigg? Yeah, probably. Yeah. But have you enjoyed our telephonic conversation this morning?
As ever, exquisite.
And can we look forward to talking to you in the near future?
You can.
Ah, yes, and if we still have to squeeze in the joys of Dean Elliott from the Simon and Garfunkel story, and, of course, Henny Penny Hen Houses, we need to say farewell, au revoir, to UB40. Take us out of the William Sitwell wine feature. Yes, it is amazing to see what Penny Roberts gets up to, and we'll be catching up with your good self, as we mentioned when we spoke earlier, to the show director for the North of England Horticulture Society's Harrogate Springflower Show. That'll be Nick Smith, because this year, Penny, you're going to be in the VIP area of the whole Yorkshire Harrogate showground thing, aren't you?
We are. How exciting is that?
Oh, it's just tremendous. Anyway, we have Deputy Vice Chancellor Professor Scott Davidson in the studio with us. We have Rachel Warren, and hopefully, possibly both will join us on our little location report, which will be taking place after our Lincoln Literary Quiz Night, which is taking place on Shakespeare's birthday, the 23rd of April. It'll be appearing in John Wenham's Events Diary. Quiz question extraordinaire and very competitive, etc. It'll be hosting on the evening of the 23rd of April, the day before Springflower Show launches. So, Scott, I can see that you're intrigued by Henny Penny's bespoke designer hen houses.
Yes, I think they're extraordinary.
Extraordinary. Do you see what he did there? Extraordinary. Sorry to draw attention to the whole thing, but there we are. Questions for Penny, then. Any thoughts? I mean, it's really, I think, a motion picture waiting to happen, this, the Penny Roberts tale of Henny Penny hen houses, but perhaps you'd like to.
Well, yeah, Henny Penny was a character in a children's book, wasn't she?
Indeed. Yeah.
But hens, do they like living in?
Yeah. How do we know? Actually, is it the quality of the eggs? Yeah, is it just a case of happiness? Do you communicate with them?
Are they social creatures?
They're very sociable, and yes, I do know. I am happy that they're happy and they're beautiful hen houses, because they continue to lay eggs through the year. Whereas if they were miserable and were not happy, they'd go off laying.
Rachel, thoughts for yourself? Again, you're also sort of just perusing the photographs.
Yes.
So we thought we'd go for a picture worth 1,000 words. So we thought we'd just use the search engine to say Henny Penny hen houses, and woo, magical things come through within that. Have you considered where having hens at all, or any questions for Penny?
my aunt has hens, actually, and they're actually really lovely. But these cows, I'm just looking at them, they're so cute. What made you decide to build them?
Well, very simply, I had a complete change of career. I used to be in the telecoms business and travelled around the place all the time. And then I rescued four ex-battery hens who came to me with lots of feathers missing and what have you, looked a little bit unloved. And we'd just been given a few months before a family Christmas present of a hen house, which my mother had bought off the internet. Wasn't particularly cheap in price, but the quality was really quite disappointing, to say the least. So when we tried to put it together out of this flat pack with a bag of pins and some really badly photocopied instructions, just thought, oh. So I said out loud, I said, right, one day, guys, I'm going to design the perfect hen house. Aww. So I stuck with that one for about 4 or 5 months, that hen house, until it just fell to pieces, and then decided that I wanted to do something about this. So I put together the perfect hen house for the chickens, but also for the owners to enjoy looking at it in their garden or paddock, but then be easy to clean out, easy to move, and well made. So I do tend to say to people, I rescued those four chickens, but I think maybe they rescued me.
Aww.
So what design factors go into the perfect hen house?
Well, as I said just a moment ago, they need to be easy to clean out. They don't have annoying nooks and crannies that can harbour any little visitors like red mite or anything. And they need to be nice and airy for the birds. But I think the most dramatic thing that sets me apart from other hen house companies is the way they look. They actually look fun and a bit quirky and a bit different. So when you garden, you enjoy looking at it under an apple tree rather than looking at something that looks like a bit of a converted rabbit hutch or something.
Yeah, the ones that I can see on the internet here, they appear to have dormer windows.
Yes, and it's all with toughened glass. It's all safe in case the child goes in there and, you know, sticks a brush in through the window or something. So it's all nice and safe.
Nothing more traumatic than for a hen. It's sort of quietly getting on its business and a huge human being stucks its childlike face in there. It's going to work, you know?
But my USP is all our hen houses always have thatched roofs. But underneath the thatch is a proper phenol-faced wood roof, so they're completely watertight and dry and everything else. So, yeah, it's just it's mainly the fun aspect and the quality of it. They're all handmade in Yorkshire, and I've had a tremendous response, and this is our busiest time of year. So after this call, I should be getting on my painting gear and going down to paint some hen houses, because we've got lots of orders that want painting in foam and ball paint.
You know, when you were providing those mobile phones to the likes of Tom Cruise, who you use at mobile premieres and various other bits and pieces, I'm sure the day sort of, yeah, I knew secretly there was a hen house designer waiting to come out there, Penny. It's fantastic.
Well, did you guys hear that we delivered one for a surprise Christmas present to Peter Andre?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know what I mean? There we are. That's amazing. You know, and obviously Peter Andre knows where his eggs are these days.
Yes, he does.
Penny, it's been fantastic connecting with your good self as ever. Rachel, last two questions, please.
Yes. Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
I have. Thank you very much.
Good. And would you like to... Sorry, these are my words. Would you like to talk to us again sometime soon?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
We'll probably catch up with you, actually, at the Harrogate Spring Flower Show. VIP area, eh?
Well, yeah.
I say.
I am just a poor boy, though my story seldom... La la la, la la la, la 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 la, la la la, la 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 la. Then I'm laying out my winter clothes, wishing I was gone, going home, where the New York City winters aren't bleeding me, leading me.
Outstandingly wonderful. Indeed, just strangely resonant of so much quality. It's unbelievable. And not only will the Gala Theatre in Durham on the 22nd of April be celebrating the joys of the Simon and Garfunkel story, but also, yes, in Lincoln, the Lincoln Theatre Royal on the 8th of May. That's Thursday the 8th of May. Joy and happiness will manifest. In between, of course, we've got Inverness, Stirling, Dunfermline, Darlington, Buxton, Southampton, Exeter, etc. Who can we speak to actually address the joys of the Simon and Garfunkel story? Well, the person who plays Paul Simon, of course, the legend from Buddy Holly times, etc. That is Dean Elliott. Dean, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I'm very well. How are you today?
Excellent. Delighted to touch base with yourself. Standing ovations every night. Go on, treat yourself to a fantastic evening. According to Victoria Kingston, author of Simon and Garfunkel, the definitive biography, storytelling at its best, Choice Radio, authentic and exciting, the stage. And as we said earlier, actually, I was talking with the wonderful Professor Scott Davidson, Deputy Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, the slightly strange Mike Reed quote, "Wow, you sound uncanny." It just seems a little bit out of kilter, that's all, with the sort of set up there. Wow, yeah, I can go with BBC Radio 2's fantastic, you know, sign up in. Absolutely beautiful. But wow, you sound uncanny.
Yeah, it sounds like a linguistically challenged Geordie, you know? You sound canny. You sound canny would be all right.
Yeah,
you sound,
uncannily
like Paul Simon would probably be.
Exactly. It's important to work on that. Dean, share with us, why did you actually decide to come out with this wonderful thing? Because, I mean, obviously after one musical icon, clearly Buddy Holly, and moving on to the side of things, Paul Simon, it's just a case of, you thought this is a wonderful opportunity to actually work through that. I mean, we see you were in Over the Rainbow, the Eva Cassidy story. The Richard and Judy show, BBC London Tonight, Jonathan Ross show, the Elaine Page show, fantastic. Now, of course, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, so it doesn't get much higher than this, Dean, but still. What was it that appealed to you about this particular theatrical experience?
Well, I think, I've always been a massive fan, like a huge fan of Simon and Garfunkel, and I was actually part of the creative team for this show. Mm. And we all met doing Buddy the Musical down in London, and in London's West End, and we wanted to do something sort of similar, but different as well. You know, we wanted to give it sort of we have a huge projection screen at the back, and we wanted to sort of, be streaming videos and images as well as telling the story of the couple. But alongside that, one thing we did realise was that their short time together was actually at the same time the whole of the 60s. They covered the 60s, which of course was, the most sort of changeable for sort of, social and political change, wasn't it really, of all the decades. So our show runs alongside the story of the 60s as well, things, like Vietnam and JFK assassination, things like that, but also the happier times as well, we've even got things like the Concorde landing, and man landing on the moon, and do you know what I mean? All these sort of we're playing with memories of the 60s as well as the story of this couple, and that's something goes well hand in hand with each other, and worked out to be a really nice show. So
we covered obviously last year the tour of Glenn Miller story, which did a similar thing with respect to the 40s, and that's what the magical thing is, that music is suddenly the soundtrack to our lives. Scott, questions and thoughts for yourself, because like myself, Scott, I suspect you might just have been around in that particular day. It's difficult to believe for Rachel, who sort of the 60s were like a long, long time ago, but just a thought from that, really.
My earliest memories of Simon and Garfunkel music was sitting on a rainy day in Stratford-upon-Avon with my school friends, going through the repertoire from The Boxer, right through singing the songs. And it was very
groovy,
much... We've all come to look for America.
I mean, there's so many great songs, that's the thing. And I think a lot of people, I know a good friend of mine who's actually currently working down in the West End, he said to me, "Oh, you're doing a show about Simon and Garfunkel? I can't really name any." And suddenly we sat there for half hour later, he was like, "Oh, yeah, of course,
exactly." It's amazing. Rachel, can you name any Simon and Garfunkel songs?
No.
Mrs. Robinson?
I know that.
Bridge Over Troubled Water?
Yeah, I probably know them, but I don't think I could name them.
We will get this thing sorted through. We will address that in every sense of the word. We've mentioned, obviously, two of the locations. I mean, the tour itself, it must be going sensationally well with respect to that side of things. And when audiences come to see the whole thing, do you get the sort of notion of, okay, entertain us, and then suddenly they leave thinking this is the best thing that's ever happened, ever?
Do you know what? The show has been received like a million times better than we ever thought. Not that we ever went into it thinking we would create something, substandard, but we've put a lot of hard work into this. We're all fans, and it took a year and a half of sort of sitting down and going through the all their biographies and their videos and working through the songs. And I mean, opening night, I said to my director, I said, you know, no one had seen the show, and we were like, we had like 600-700 people in at High Wycombe it was, and I said, is it any good? And he was like, yeah, it's brilliant. And from the first song they were with us, and by the end we had everyone on their feet, standing ovation. We've had that every night, so we must be doing something right, which we're really, really proud of. I don't think we can put our finger on it quite yet because it's so early on the tour what it is, but yeah, it's been quite something. I think mainly the music's brilliant, but also no one's ever told the story before. There's been a few sort of tribute acts, at, you know, like duos with a guitar or something, but no one's ever sort of told the story, certainly not in like a big scale sort of theatre show, you know, on the big stage.
And we'll continue to do that. The Simon and Garfunkel story.com will give you the website to go to find all manner of marvelous things. As we mentioned, the Garth Theatre in Durham, in Lincoln, of course, on the 8th of May. Two final questions for your good self. At present, Dean, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I have. It's been wonderful. Thank you very much.
So the next critical question, which hopefully we're already in negotiations with, can you actually join us again as we follow the tour around and hopefully connect for a slightly longer time in the next few weeks or thereabouts? Or certainly,
yeah, absolutely. We'd love to. That would be wonderful.
Dean Elliott. And, of course, a plug, of course, for your colleague, who, of course, also works on the show itself, because, let's face it, it's Dean Elliott as Paul Simon and Johnny Smart as Art Garfunkel.
Yeah, that's right. Straight out of drama school.
There we are.
The only guy we could find to perm his hair, so...
Fantastic. That says everything, really. OK, you've been listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM. Thanks to Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Dr. Tony Bunnell, David Webster, Nick Smith, Melanie Crouch, William Sitwell, Penny Roberts and Dean Elliott, and, of course, Rachel Warren and Deputy Vice-Chancellor Professor Scott Davidson. Scott, have you enjoyed the show?
I've enjoyed it immensely, and the time has just flown.
And Rachel, good for you, good self, back on the whole thing?
As always, of course.
Brilliant. News coming up from the Sky News Centre. Stay tuned for much more good stuff on 107.3 FM, Siren, Lincoln's first community radio station. Can we all say bye-bye?
Goodbye.
Bye.